So, the preacher who won't shy away from the blue, black, or white, gold dress controversy will not shy away from a little song, will not shy away from "Baby, It's Cold Outside." Yeah, you've heard about this by now, right? "I really can't stay. Baby, it's cold outside. I gotta get away. Baby, it's cold outside. My mother will be suspicious." You know what some people are saying, right? Some people are saying it's a song about date rape. Apologists say the woman in the song is at the forefront of the sexual revolution. She wants to stay, but knows her overnight stay will scandalize the pious. I don't have a real opinion one way or the other. I'll continue to listen and sing along when I'm alone. If you don't like it, don't listen. Don't sing along. I think we owe that to each other. Because here's the thing. It's a song, just a song. And a song is words and melody that go through a thousand prisms for the lyricist and for the composer and for the performer and for the listener. And the experience of listening to a song is never exactly the same twice. Now, I'm not saying we should never pay attention or consider what we're listening to or singing. I'm just saying that if we lose sight of song as poetry, as expressive language, metaphorical language, sometimes even spiritual language, we won't get much joy out of it. Now, I don't have the time or energy, and you probably don't have the patience, for me to take you through all of Christian music, through the arguments over "Jesus is my boyfriend" songs, through the horrible bloodletting "I must be right at all costs and you must believe as I do" onward Christian soldiers songs. I don't even have time for all the Advent and Christmas songs. So this morning I'll limit myself just to the Christmas hymns that feature Mary. The Mary we just read about from the Gospel of Luke. 10 years ago, Michael Linton, head of the Division of Music Theory and Composition at Middle Tennessee State University, set out to write an article about the Mary that we sing about in Christmas carols. His working title was, "Who is Mary?" But as he began his research, he realized that a better title is, "Where is Mary?" Since, surprisingly, she's mostly absent in the church's songs about Christmas. Mary, or the Virgin, or Mother, or even Woman, appears in 27% of our Christmas carols. She's slightly behind the angels and the shepherds, who are both at 28%, but significantly ahead of the wise men, who come in at only 13%. But Mary's presence is even less than this low percentage first suggests. Because shepherds and angels and wise men are frequently mentioned in multiple verses of a carol, but Mary is typically mentioned only once. And sometimes even that is a very oblique reference. Of the big 10 Christmas carols, "Silent Night," "Joy to the World," "Hark the Herald Angels Sing," only 3 can be counted as including a reference to Mary. She appears in the second verse of both "O Little Town of Bethlehem," "Christ is Born of Mary," and "Hark the Herald Angels Sing." You didn't miss it when we sang it a while ago, did you? That reference to Mary that we sang about? Offspring of a virgin's womb. That's the only part of Mary that's mentioned in the tune. So why is it that Mary is largely missing in our Christmas singing? My guess is that the answer is pretty simple. Mary can't be taken out of the Christmas story completely, but in the carols, she's mentioned as little as possible for fear of turning her into an object of cultic devotion, something most Protestants have accused Roman Catholics of doing for a very long time. And so Mary merits only a passing mention in many carols, and in most, no mention at all. We Protestants can date the demise of Mary back to 1,500 years after the birth of Christ. Martin Luther was a pious Catholic until he wasn't. When he got fed up with some things that were going on in the church, he wrote down his main points, 95 of them, and nailed them to the church door. What was it that Martin Luther was so angry about? Specifically, he was angry about clerical abuses, and mainly the sale of indulgences. Indulgences were basically payments made for the remission of sins. And for the right price, you could buy, say, Uncle Frank's early exit from purgatory, or you could get Sister Sarah an express ticket to heaven. One problem Luther saw with that was that supposedly during our lifetimes, all good Christians had already confessed their sins and received forgiveness. In other words, by buying these indulgences, Catholics were in effect conducting a financial transaction for forgiveness. There was no contrition required. Luther argued that the forgiveness of sin came from only one source, the grace of God through Jesus Christ. As Martin Luther nailed his theses to the door, the Protestant Reformation began in earnest, as did the demise of Mary. There are many wonderful things that occurred after that day when Martin Luther nailed that piece of paper to the door. Lots of wonderful things happened to the priesthood of all believers. However, as we often do, when we try to distance ourselves from the things that we disagreed with, we may have gone a little overboard. We may have, as the saying goes, thrown the baby out with the bathwater. For example, we lost the practice of confession, which truly is good for the soul. And we lost something else too. As Reverend David Beanick used to tell us, this is what happened to the Protestants. He tells the story of the Protestant who went to heaven, and Jesus himself greeted the Protestant and offered a guided tour of heaven. They set off, and soon they came to a grand room that was filled with heavenly hosts. And Jesus began making introductions. "I know you know my father," he said to the Protestant, "but I don't believe you've met my mother." Maybe. One of the things we Protestants lost when making sure we kept our distance from Catholicism is Mary. I'm not advocating worship of Mary or the cult of the Virgin, but there must be a middle ground. What about respect? What about a whole life, a life beyond this birth story? Because if we relegate Mary only to the Nativity, if we only ever see her as the Virgin, the child herself, really, then we are in danger of missing so much. Mary, the mother of an adolescent Jesus who had to look that boy in the eye and say, "How could you do this to us?" when he went missing and was found later in the temple teaching the elders. Or Mary, the one who is really responsible for launching the public ministry of her son Jesus. At the wedding in Cana, when the wine was running out, she told her son, "Do something about it." And her son said, "Now's not really the time." And she said, "Now's as good a time as any." And then to all those who were the stewards there, do what he tells you to do. And one of the other things that we're in danger of losing is the ability to learn from Mary, the mother of Jesus, to learn many things. But in this season of Advent, I'm mindful that if we lose touch with Mary, we lose the opportunity to learn from her how to choose joy. Let me explain what I mean. I have preached in Advent for 12 years now. And with the exception of a few specialized Advent themes, I've preached on Advent peace, hope, love, and joy. As I've prepared this year's Advent sermons, I've looked back over those previous ones and I realized something interesting. Over 12 years, I've preached on peace, hope, love, and joy, and also preached on all the main characters of the Nativity story: John, Mary, Elizabeth, Zechariah, Joseph. And I've used a ton of combinations: Joseph and hope, Joseph and love, John and hope, John and peace. You see how I match them up differently? But not so with Mary. Every single time, Mary is joy. What a ridiculous choice. Oh, it's a safe choice, a justifiable choice, but it's also just a little bit ridiculous. Let me show you. The first time we meet Mary in the scriptures, the part we read this morning, we can see that Mary is remarkable. Mary says yes to God when God's angel appears and acknowledges that she believes the prophecy. And there is no send someone else. There's no I'm too young or I'm too old, like the prophet said. Mary instead says, I am the Lord's servant. May it be done to me as you have said. Here is a young woman, knowing there was no way to explain her pregnancy to her betrothed. Only another impossible appearance of an angel to her betrothed, to Joseph, kept her from divorce or worse, death at the hands of the religious authorities. Do you really want to hear a song about that story? And if you do, do you really want it to be the stark truth? Well, want it or not, we do get a song, and we get it from Mary. It's just not the song that we're expecting. Mary, pregnant with the baby Jesus, and not yet married to Joseph, has traveled to the home of her cousin Elizabeth. And Elizabeth is much older than Mary, probably 60 or more to Mary's 12, 13, 14 years. Elizabeth is 6 months pregnant with her first child, and you know there must be a lot of backstory there. It can't be easy for her. And yet she welcomes her young cousin, not only welcomes her, but blesses her. Elizabeth says to this cousin Mary that shows up at her door, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. The mother of my Lord comes to me, for as soon as I heard the sound of your greeting, the child in my womb leaped for joy. And blessed is she who believed there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord." And Mary answers her cousin's blessing with a song. "The mighty one has done great things for me. Holy is God's name." It's a song of joy. Joy in the midst of a country terrorized by Roman soldiers, amongst a people betrayed by their own leaders, unmarried, pregnant, far from home, a young girl breaks into a song of joy. Now, who couldn't use some of that? Not just at Christmas, but all the time. And I'm not talking about denial, and I'm not talking about being naive. I'm not supposing that Mary was too young and too unworldly to be aware of the seriousness of her circumstances. I think she was well aware. Mary, did you know? You bet I knew. And still I said yes. I think she was well aware, and she chose joy. In spite of the circumstances, she chose joy. And that's how we portray her over and over in song, full of peace, full of joy. Really? This mother of a child destined to die. This 12, 13, 14-year-old child who, if we want to get political, is younger than the age of consent. But let's not be political this morning. For this morning, let's be lyrical. Let's be Mary. Let's choose joy. You know, in Greek, Mary is called Theotokos, God bearer. Do you think the plan was that in all of the history of the universe, only one human being would carry God? Of course not. We are all God bearers. And not just for one day and not just for 9 months, but for all our lives, we carry the Spirit of the living God. And we share that Spirit with all whom we meet. And so I invite you to be Mary, to acknowledge the truth that the dominion of God is also in you. The light of the world rests in you, even in you. Joy is a simple gift, one of the many gifts of grace. Joy is the willingness to look beyond immediate circumstances, to live in faith, to bless others, to behold God in everything, even in your neighbor, even in the stranger, even in yourself. Just for today, I invite you to choose joy. And if it is a good thing, choose it again tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow. Mm-hmm.